Comic Timing is a member of the Comics Podcast Network, bitch.
Welcome to episode 39, part 2 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in his rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, and discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Well, the rest of 52 and the beginning of Countdown is here to be discussed. Once more, David D. and John Mayo join me. We have another hour and 40 minutes jam-packed of 52 and Countdown action here, and I hope you guys enjoyed as much as we did recording it. Here now, Comic Timing. Let's actually touch a little bit on the Everyman project, because that's a little bit further back than the stuff that we've been discussing. However, it did have really good conclusions. Are you satisfied with the way it ended? Obviously, when last we talked about 52, the big New Year's Eve thing did not happen yet. Mm. And to say the least, we were all pretty much wrong about Reign of the Supermen. I don't remember any of us mentioning Everyman falling from the sky. But that was certainly something I did not see coming, and when I did see it, that was probably the 52 moment that made my jaw drop the most, because I didn't think Lex Luthor could actually be that cruel, and then he was that cruel.
Yeah.
Well, I was a little confused by kind of his motivation in one or two places and the motivation of one or two of the people working for him. Lex has always been shown as being kind of a petty, you know, I want it now. And if I can't have it, nobody else can. So him shutting down the powers kind of made sense. Mm-hmm. The part of the whole storyline that just didn't really play well for me was the big reveal at the end of issue, I guess 38, where suddenly, you know, he has powers. Because now they kind of sort of built that up with the guy working for him. I think his name was Dennis. Having to constantly go to him every time Lex said, I want to be tested again, and having to come back saying, no, you still didn't pass.
Yeah.
You know, and being visibly agitated the last couple of times. It's like, well, I think anybody who's going to tell Luthor something he doesn't want to hear is going to be that way.
Yeah.
Up until the lab explosion and Lex suddenly having powers, I don't really think there was any reasonable expectation or clues laid out that this guy had been lying. And then there's the whole question of just how quickly did Lex get those powers? He goes from one scene saying, you know, hey, set this up, you've got 15 minutes, to bam, you know, he's encountered Natasha and he's fully loaded with Superman's powers or whatever. So well, there was a bit of a disconnect.
Well, it had never been established how long you need to be, you know, hit with the tachyon beams or whatever the hell it was to get your powers, because, you know, I mean, the first time he realized that he was a candidate for it, that, you know, that they'd been lying to him, and that actually, no, your physiology will work with the process. You know, there was nothing to tell us that the process doesn't take 10 minutes. So that didn't bother me, but I will agree that some of the pacing of revealing the information was a little confusing. You know, who knew what when, and at what point we realized somebody was lying to him. It's like, that was just some of the storytelling, and that was a little muddled.
And the irony is, Lex is so much the kind of guy that if somebody tells him no the second time, he's going to be, if you can't do it, I'll find somebody who can and fire the guy. You know what I mean? And this is one time he didn't, and it would have worked.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And there was a part of me when they first presented the notion that for some reason Lex's physiology won't let him have powers, I thought, perfect. Like, there's something so just perfect about that, and about the way that it plays into his jealousy and his hatred of Superman. Like, I wish that they hadn't changed that, because to me that's just such a wonderful core value, that, like, here he was thinking that he was going to build this super program and that he would be kind of the Superman at the head of it, and fate, just like it won't let him grow his hair, also won't let him be Superman. Like, I was so in love with that idea that I didn't want it to be subverted, that, oh, it's a plot by what's his name, the scientist. Like, I mean, I realized that it allowed there. I mean, I would have rather Lex strap on the old armor and that's what he fights Steel in, or that they're both out of their armor and it's a fist fight or something. Like, I would have easily traded superpowered Lex for the Lex Luthor that's so mad that he can't have superpowers, that's the big part that feeds into him turning all those powers off.
Exactly.
Because him turning the powers off was one of my favorite moments in 52, because it's like such a perfect piece of villainy. I mean, it's motivated from an incredibly petty place, and the trigger is so sudden. It's like, they didn't get me any Christmas presents, and that's enough. Like, that, to me, that's great. Like,
but
that's
those are the ones he doesn't punish.
Oh, that's true. Well, but that he's going to create this event. That's true. Well, then he gets mad. Then he kind of gets mad, and he sort of starts to tear it all down, and he's going to strike out against Supernova by creating the crisis. But that's a good point. But but that the trigger is that it's Christmas, he's a villain, nobody's giving him a hug, the sled that he had when he was a child, you know, all that stuff kind of comes crashing down. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I loved that, and then that did kind of get, to me, tarnished a little bit when it's like, oh, look, it's Lex with glowing eyes and Superman powers. Well, all right, you know. I will say, to Ian's larger question about the Everyman storyline, I loved it as a storyline partly because it fit in so well with that theme of what makes a hero. Like,
telegraphed. Back in the first issue, Steel basically explains his entire storyline to us.
Sure.
He flat out says that this isn't about grabbing a costume or somebody giving you power. It's about you, what you make of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it took it happening for it to actually, you know, sink into her. It was like one of those drug commercials where, you know, you don't realize that you're doing something so terrible to yourself until you do the drugs. And they're like, oh, wow, yeah, I've learned my lesson. I'm never going back there again. You know, and that's pretty much the exact same thing that happened with Natasha and with all the other Everyman subjects.
Sure. And I like the way that it fit into it. You know, there were a number of, like, clever little sort of who wants to be a superhero reality TV kind of jokes.
Yeah,
yeah, that was funny. I like that.
And also, I kind of loved the metatext that occasionally you'd be, like, reading a piece of the Everyman story and, like, the facing page would actually be an ad for Who Wants to Be a Superhero. But I really liked the way that the Everyman story kind of commented on the place of fame in popular culture right now. That, you know, it's not like you want superpowers because you want to right a wrong or you want to defend against injustice. You want to be a superhero because you just want to be a superhero. Just like people don't want to be famous because they are accomplished in their field or because they're talented. They just want to be famous to be famous.
Exactly.
And to me, that storyline, it just felt like if we reread this story in 10 years, we'll look back and go, that's right, yeah, that was 2006 when all that, oh, yeah, the reality TV show stuff was going on. And I mean, it just felt like it was a great piece of pop culture writing as an analogy.
Well, and it was a good angle on it to go with the Booster storyline.
Sure.
Where he had the fame.
Yep.
And this is the people trying to get that.
Yeah.
So.
And
so it was worth it for that. I just wish it hadn't ended with Super Lex.
Well, yeah, and I mean, what about the character itself, Everyman? I mean, obviously, the messed up stuff that was going on with him, I mean, whatever you do, do not invite him to a dinner party, because you do not want to know what he's going to do to your dinner guests. I mean,
I'll say this, too many bald white guys. Too many bald white guys, it's confusing. Yeah. If Lex is in a comic, that's it. He's the only bald white guy, no others. He's the only bald white guy on the set that day.
Yeah.
What about the scene where they actually do get confused?
Oh, Lord,
posed as Lex at the end.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The whole bit of how the hell did Clark Kent figure all this stuff out? That's a bit much.
Apparently, he's known him since Smallville. I mean, that's one of the New Earth things now. I mean, he's known him his entire life from the sounds of things.
I mean, I had no problem with him realizing Lex is pulling a fast one. That I buy. He knows him. He's dealt with him even just in Metropolis enough, etc. But to then go run in the building and find him in this huge skyscraper thing, it's like, okay, does he have his X-ray vision back? What's going on? And that was one that was just kind of presented as a done deal with no real explanation or setup.
I guess. I mean, I don't read a lot of Superman, so to me, and perhaps I was being too generous, I kind of assumed that this was actually that Clark knew exactly, like, which door, because he'd just been in that base before, he just knew the building, but had to kind of sell to everybody the idea of, oh, shucks, boy, I sure am a good reporter, I figured that out, you know, like, that he actually, it wasn't even X-ray vision, he, like, literally knew which door to go check.
That's really possible.
Because Superman knew,
you know,
he had to take that risk that people would kind of wonder how Clark Kent knew, but again, that might just be me being
If they had done a callback to the scene where Lex had Clark captured trying to figure out who Supernova was, and it was that same room,
That's
then true. I'd be fine. Okay, I got it. No problem. I'm happy with that. But yeah, they didn't seem to do a callback to that, and it didn't seem to be that same room.
Yeah, no, it was that was one of those moments, one of those scenes where I felt like I was feeling the crunch a little bit, time-wise.
Yeah. And yeah. But, do you mind if I give a slight spoiler for Manhunter? Because
sure.
All right,
by all means.
I wouldn't understand it anyway.
Okay, well, it's about every man because.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. I heard about this.
Yeah. The way that they tied it in was that after this final conclusion occurred, that's when every man shows up in Manhunter, and he shows up in Manhunter posing as Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, because the storyline going on in Manhunter post return after it was quote unquote canceled was that Manhunter was the defense attorney for Wonder Woman, and that I think the United Nations is trying to get her or something along those lines because of obviously killing the head of Checkmate has ramifications. Even though she was cleared, they still want to go through another trial here. So she's doing all that, and right when it comes out that she's, as she was doing it in order to protect Superman and all that, and because he killed Blue Beetle, in comes Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, hey guys, what's up?
Huh.
And we're not sure whether or not it's Ted from before he was killed. We're not sure whether or not it's Ted from, somewhere else, as it were, because at the time we didn't know about the alternate realities, but it could have very well been another Ted. But eventually, through Batman's deductions, we find out it's Everyman. That Everyman survived all this stuff in 52, and there he is. And the fact that they waited until after that storyline wrapped up in 52 proves just how well-timed everything was in the DCU post 1 year later. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, by and large, they coordinated things really well. The only exception I would say to that was the Dr. Fate miniseries.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But other than that, there were wonderful times where something would happen in 52 and then a book would roll out the same week that, would have little touches from it. Those are great. That's true, yeah. And I forgot about when we were talking about cash grabs, that even though 52 doesn't appear on the cover of those Dr. Fate tie-ins, it appeared in the ads. And, yeah, that whole miniseries really watered down one of the mysteries in 52, which was a shame.
Yeah. And I mean, it pretty much just let us know that either he was hallucinating, or it just wasn't the Helmet of Fate. And
it was a pretty mediocre miniseries to boot too. It's like one Boland cover is kind of all I remember from it.
I only picked up Detective Chimp, and I enjoyed Detective Chimp, and that's all I read.
Yeah,
the Detective Chimp stuff was good. The others were okay, but not great.
Yeah.
So hey, a thing that we've not gotten into yet, which is sort of the elephant in the end of the room. So the multiverse, then.
Yes, the multiverse.
Megaverse,
yes. Next will be the Ultraverse. Oh, wait, that's been done. All right.
I wish DC would just make up their minds and pick something. We go from, way, way back in the day, essentially kind of sort of a universe that became the multiverse in the Silver Age. We slam it down to a universe again with Crisis on Infinite Earths. Go with that. Do some retuning with Zero Hour. We get to Infinite Crisis. We kind of sort of inflate it back out, but not really, not quite. Slam it back down. The first few pages of 52 very much solidify we're back down to one Earth. And then they pull this at the end. And it's a different set of Earths than we had before, but really, really close. And it's I got really mixed feelings on this. I mean, I like the concept of a multiverse. I think there's a lot of good story potential there. A lot of fun can be had with it. And if these turn out to be worlds that essentially can be home for the orphaned stories that got displaced back in Crisis on Infinite Earths, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the direction they're going.
It depends, actually, because from the looks of things, I think certain Earths are very similar, if not almost, going to be, a home for these other stories. However, they probably are going to build brand new stories on some of these Earths as well.
Well, like Earth 10, if that's an Earth where the old Freedom Fighters series could have taken place, not necessarily to say that it definitely did, but at least nothing precludes it, that gives me peace of mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, yes, I'm that much of a geek. I will.
Well, it is interesting that, there does seem to be a real philosophical difference in our alternate universes, something that's just there when the story needs them, or must they be cataloged and organized? You know, should it just be a complete Wild West, open frontier? Hey, you know, if the crime syndicate, they're on a different Earth. Don't worry about it. You know, when you need them, do you time travel when you need to? Do you have all of those sort of science fiction tropes when they're necessary, but, you know, nobody worries about how they affect other things or, you know, what is established about them? Or do you get really organized about it and catalog them and count them? And, you know, and it's, I'm kind of two minds. I was excited about the multiverse thing. I really wish it hadn't been spoiled in that column. I mean, I think that was
a
calculated choice, because I think the Dio was sacrificing a nice surprise in the denouement of 52. I mean, the multiverse wasn't the point of 52. Like, it was a nice surprise. I do think that the marketing department did them no favors by having ads that said things like, do you know what the big mystery is yet? Because it's like, the fact that the multiverse exists is kind of off topic for the rest of 52.
Sure.
Like, it's the payoff of the booster story.
Yeah.
But it's really got nothing to do with the theme, and it's got nothing to do with any of the other stories. Which is fine.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it was just a thing that the writers kind of had at the end. It would be a nice surprise and a kind of gift to themselves and their peers, like, hey, look, we gave you this thing to play with. Look at all the possibilities. Like, instead of tying things up it was almost like, as we discussed in our last conversation, those little tweaks to the Infinite Crisis hardcover. It's like, to me, they made a little more wiggle room. Like, you know what, instead of me definitively saying where this guy went and that she's dead and that Earth is gone, I'm going to kind of leave it a little more open, because maybe somebody's going to do something with that. Of course, we find out Geoff Johns himself was going to do something with that. But I guess what I'm getting at is that I think that the reason that DiDio might have spilled that secret is that at that point, he calculated that, okay, you know what, I'm going to spoil the ending of 52 or an ending of 52 because I need to begin the drumbeat to get you to buy Countdown.
Yeah.
I mean, who didn't know that Countdown was going to have something to do with the multiverse? We kind of all did.
Exactly.
And we knew it when it was time to place our orders for Countdown. Like,
yeah.
we knew it before it came out. And that's a shame. You're like, you know, I as an ending to 52, all the possibilities of the multiverse, and just a great end to the Booster Rip Daniel story. Like, I love the way that issue tied it up. It was really science fiction-y. It was trippy. It was fun. The throwing the football, all that. It was great. Like, it was just a really enjoyable denouement, and to me, a great setup for the Booster Gold series. Like, to me, that's the place where you go and you play with the multiverse. Like, a group of characters, you know, a multiverse exists, but there's so few characters that know about it that they're going to head out and they're going to go be the explorers and they're going to deal with it. And then everybody else is going to continue business as usual on New Earth, having no idea this multiverse, this megaverse exists. They're just going to keep, you know, so that for the rest of everybody, you know, Batman's going to keep punching people in the face in Gotham, assuming this is the only Gotham, and I need to worry about no other Gothams because this is it.
Right. Yeah.
And great. I mean, to me, that's how it should work. My worries, and they're kind of already, you know, in the first few issues of Countdown, they're kind of already at hand, is that, like you said, John, I kind of want them to make up their minds, and it feels like already we're going from, hey, there's a megaverse, and there's all these possibilities. It's a big open thing. Go have fun. We're kind of immediately going to, and now will be the war of the multiverse. I must eliminate the irregularities of the multiverse. It's like, no, why is the multiverse the point right away?
And it's not only just that. It's the fact that we already have hints towards another crisis in other books in the Justice League, and a rumor that came out in the most recent Lying in the Gutters column is that it does have a name of Final Crisis.
Well, that was actually kind of set up in 52 itself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the characters, Dr. Kale on Oolong Island in issue 46, flat out says the final crisis is coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's got ties to the New Gods, the Apocalypse stuff, so.
Sure, and in the current JLA JSA crossover, at one point, somebody identifies where they've time traveled to, and they refer to it as
the middle
shortly
crisis.
After the middle crisis. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's like, just, you know, I'd be having more fun if the Megaverse is kind of a gift to the other DC writers to do what you guys are saying. It's like, you know what, now there's a home for those orphan stories, there's new places to play in, you know, for those of you that it makes you feel good, hey, there's an Earth where the question's still alive, you know, all that
yeah.
stuff. And we'll get to it eventually. It's just out there. It's just a possibility. We widened out the horizon.
If it was a planting seeds, not a, hey, we're into crop rotation, we're going to harvest this next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As opposed to like, and next week, there'll be a monitor shooting people. It's like, oh, come on. And, it's too soon. Like, I loved the notion that there would be this dramatic irony that, you know, Booster saved the universe, but nobody knows it. Great. Booster and a few others know, and we, the readers, know a thing that even Batman and Superman don't know about the universe they live in. Great. You know, like, leave it like that for a while. It would be preference.
The funny thing is, we now have two characters that we know have crossed Earths.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've got Dula Dent, who is killed off in Countdown 51. Mm-hmm. Although, frankly, the way they killed her off, I half expected her to show up again the next issue, because we saw a lot of those kinds of, oh, they're dead in 52 and need to come back.
Yeah.
The only difference being when it's Dula Dent, I don't care.
Yes. Yeah. But other character we know is the one identified as Talon from the Titans, back from the big, you know, audition scene. He's he'd have gotten his butt kicked on my Earth.
Yeah.
Well,
these are both two non-powered people.
What was it? Wasn't
it like bus service between Earths?
Didn't they originally say that Talon was from the Antimatterverse? That he is from the Antimatterverse?
I don't believe we have gotten a clear indication anywhere of where he's from.
Okay, because I know for certain that
people were speculating he was the Robin to Owlman.
Yeah, yeah, that's
would now be Earth 3.
Yeah,
because I'm almost certain that I remembered reading somewhere that he was the Owlman's, you know, sidekick from the Antimatterverse, which at you know, once upon a time was the home to the crime syndicate, but now I guess it's back to being Earth 3.
Now it's possible they revealed that somewhere, but I don't recall that having been revealed.
All right, okay.
Because I think that was just online speculation somewhere.
I gotcha.
And it could be entirely right. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
It just seems funny that the only people we've seen on the wrong Earth are people that, I mean, if it was a Flash, if it was a Superman, if it was a Green Lantern, somebody who had, I don't know, powers and abilities beyond those of mortal men or whatever, and could conceivably get to another Earth, that'd be...
How about the fact that when we saw the glimpse from Earth 2 that there were missing Kryptonians? Now, if we just got back Power Girl's identity only to have her belong to Earth 2, I am going to be very annoyed.
At some point, they need to tell us what the hell's going on with Earth 2.
Exactly. Because, I mean,
and that may be where they're going with this crisis. I don't know.
I like the look of this new Earth 2. I like that the costumes are different. I like that the characters seem to be different. And that there are counterparts to even Jay Garrick on Earth 2. That Garrick is not from Earth 2 makes me a very happy person. But
that Earth 2 panel we got is basically could have been a continuation of the Earth 2 pre-crisis.
Yeah.
There was nothing precluding that. Now, granted, we also have the Jay Garrick and the JSA on New Earth in parallel with that, which is just kind of sort of weird because they're such close counterparts.
Yeah, but again, like I said, from the looks of things with this Earth 2 is the fact that I think that we are going to get different characters with possibly even different pasts. That even though they look alike, we might get, you know, somewhat of a different origin if they ever do decide to go to Earth 2.
Almost certainly, and I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, I mean, it if they start doing that, if it starts being about characters who live on New Earth but came from another place, they're just going to paint themselves right back into some of those same corners, you know? I mean, it's like, after all the hard work that somebody like Geoff Johns does to make Hawkman and Hawkgirl and Power Girl and Donna Troy almost make sense again. Almost. Like, if you don't tug at some of the strings too hard, it pretty much makes sense. You know, I don't mind some complicated things, but let's not go mucking about with, like, their past again. I want the multiverse to be there. I don't want to go there right away. Like, I'm excited that it's there. I just don't want to, like, immediately be taking a big tour of it, other than in the booster book. Like, I'm excited about the booster book. I mean, that's something like the old Claremont Alan Davis Excalibur book with the Crosstime Caper. Have a great time of just touring through all these various places, because you're kind of, the rest of New Earth is sort of protected because you just have these kind of out-of-time adventurers that are doing it, you know. But to me, putting the multiverse into Countdown and leading towards Final Crisis is only to make it feel like we are constantly in crisis. You know what I mean? Like, can't the Megaverse just get along? And, you know, it's like it just seems like it's gonna go back to that well too many times. It's, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe Countdown will be brilliant. It's too early to tell. But
just the fact,
my instinct tells me that I'm not ready for it yet.
Just the fact that we have two different Legion of Superheroes running around right now.
Yeah. I was gonna mention that.
Kind of makes me think that we're already getting in way too deep because.
But if we go with this is the Legion of Superheroes in the JLA JSA crossover, from the future of Earth One, which presumably is roughly the equivalent of the pre-crisis Earth One, I'm okay with that because it basically says any story that we didn't fit into New Earth, it existed in one of these others. It's all fine. It's good. You read the story for a reason. Be happy. And if they start going, the Earth 2 we showed you, not the Roy Thomas one whatsoever. It's completely different.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be disappointed because it just further complicates things.
Well, and how about the fact that Superman has already stated that he went on adventures with this Legion that showed up in JLA JSA? I mean,
that goes back to trying to put the whole Superboy aspect back into Superman.
Yeah.
Only without calling it.
Yes.
When I was a young Superman.
The Adventures of Superman as a boy.
His name was Super.
When I was a youthful Superman, played around with the Legion of Superheroes.
They're going to buy the rights.
They called me
Superman,
but they were being very kind. I wasn't a man yet. I wasn't a boy. Wasn't a man yet.
Just like on All That. Literally, they're going to take Super Dude and apply it to Superman. That's what he was when he was a kid. Period. End of story. We're done. Please. I mean, that whole thing's ridiculous. They should just resolve that already because, I mean, Superboy is Superboy. All right, let's just get that in people's heads.
This comes down to every time they try to clean up or simplify or fix the continuity, all they do is you know, make it more and more convoluted. If they basically would just say, you know, we're going with what we got, and going to make the best of it going forward and not try to say, well, you know, we really want to retool this. We liked it better when Wonder Woman was in the JLA from the beginning, so we're going to put that back. And it undermines stories they've told.
Yeah.
And they've done this enough times that I think there's a cynicism and a contingent of the readership that it's like, well, this too will pass.
Yeah.
And if you're going into a story with that attitude, why are you even bothering to read the story? You know, to me, this is one of the things that, you know, has caused some erosion in readership and enjoyment in longevity of some of the stories. And some of these are problems that, you know, the seeds were planted back literally in the first crisis back in 1985. And, of course, at the time, nobody could have seen this stuff coming in terms of what would the long-term repercussions be.
Of course, yeah. But, I mean, just the fact that we established, you know, that the whole New Earth thing in Infinite Crisis, and it looked like we were safe from the multiverse for a while. And then immediately, once 52's over, we're back at the multiverse. Kind of feels, I don't know, it just kind of feels kind of cheap.
We are and we're not. The part that annoys me is you look at the first couple of pages of issue 1 and issue 52 of 52. And in issue 1, it's very clearly, this is where we left off on Infinite Crisis, down to the One Earths. Oh, wait, you know, back down in issue 52, we didn't show you what happened the minute after, or the instant after that last panel we showed you in issue 1.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't bother me, though, because I can understand where there are expectations to be had of sort of the objective camera to be objective. I take that point, but I guess I don't mind being told a story, so I don't mind them leaving that out at the beginning if they're going to show it to me at the end, because to me that's kind of, we've earned it then. Like, you know, then it was the secret. You know, like, I guess, I don't know, I guess, and again, there's no right or wrong to it. It may just be a difference in preference between, you know, how you and I like to read, but, you know, I guess I like the surprises so long as the surprises are justified. Which is different
I like
than
surprises.
If they're properly set up. It's that, you know, once you surprise me with it and then explain to me how that logically then sell me on it, and I'm okay. Like, I don't need to always have, like, I didn't need to have something in the first page of the first issue of 52 that gave me a fair guess that, wait a minute, it looks kind of like maybe there is more than one Earth.
Well,
you know,
I'm not saying
like
they had to do that. I'm saying they shouldn't have essentially, I don't want to say lied to me, but intentionally misled me and set my expectation one way. You know, and again, it comes down to, yeah, I do expect a bit more of a fair play storytelling. I expect that the creators of the comic, they are my guide to this universe. They have the ability to focus my attention, to show me and not show me what they want to show me, to take me down this journey on this story. And if I don't enjoy the story, if I get lost in the story, if it doesn't make sense, and if when it's all said and done, I walk back down that path and I'm still lost, sure, some of that is on me as the person taking the journey, but some of that's also on the guides.
Sometimes I enjoy an unreliable narrator. You know, sometimes I enjoy that one curtain that's up that later, you know, you can kind of peek behind it and you look back at that stuff in a new way. I don't know. I guess I'm
fine with getting a new twist on something we already saw. It's like, oh, if I'd realized this, or we're seeing it from a different angle, or what we saw we misinterpreted, whatever. But when they flat out leave out a key line of dialogue or something of that sort that becomes a major plot point. I mean, I'm willing to forgive, hey, you know, Captain Marvel's costume keeps changing, you know, or whatever, because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But when I get to not one, not two, but a lot of the key reveals, and I feel they've pulled something out of nowhere that was a key plot point, or even after the reveal is all said and done and explained to me, I still don't get it.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
It's a major problem.
Now, granted, they did an excellent story, excellent job telling this story. It was fun. It had the emotional payoff. I left satisfied on an emotional level, but there were a couple of places intellectually that, you know, if I start to pick at the story, it starts to unravel. Given the time pressures they were under, et cetera, et cetera, I'm not surprised that happened. I'm not disappointed that happened.
Yeah.
But to me, it's more than just my expectations of the story.
Well,
I think there's an aspect of what was and wasn't in 52 that was a little lacking in some areas in terms of plot cohesion, in terms of storytelling points, things like that. What really worries me about Countdown is, granted, 52 started a little slow because they had to set a hell of a lot up. Countdown, you know, the first issue was okay, but a little underwhelming. The second issue had some major things that it's like, wait a sec, this makes no sense whatsoever. A scene or two that were out of left field. It seems to be starting from a weaker starting point on a story level that, while I certainly hope they can pull it out and it's just a brilliant story, I don't have that same level of confidence at the moment.
You can say what you will about Paul Dini. I love him. But, I mean, he's not working with anywhere near the level of writer that, you know, that the cabal that you had in 52 were. I mean, you've got Paul Dini as main story writer. That's perfectly fine, but everybody else who's working on this is not on the level of a Rucka, a Johns, a Morrison, or a Waite.
If it were a problem with execution of the issues, I would say, okay, I agree with you, and I see where you're going on this. I'm not having such a problem with the actual execution of the story so much as the story and plot points, which I take to be Paul Dini's role.
Okay.
I mean, Jimmy Olsen knowing who Jason Todd and Dick Grayson were.
Well,
has problems.
Didn't he apparently know that pre-Crisis? I could be wrong on
Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yes, pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths. Back on the pre-Crisis Earth 1. Didn't he know who
Batman
was?
Does that matter?
No. It doesn't matter at all. I'm saying this might just be part of the retooling that happened in New Earth that apparently he knows this again.
I think he knew who Bat-Hound was, but not who Robin was.
He was a member of the Legion of Superheroes for a while.
Really? He also would cross-dress a bit, didn't he? Good Jimmy Olsen.
Well, I mean, he was Porcupine Kid. I mean, they've got a whole showcase of his amazing transformation. So, based on what we're seeing in issue 50 of Countdown, if he can't figure out who Batman is, he should be shot.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the guy that owns Bat-Hound is probably Batman.
Well, certainly the guy who is
the guy who, you know... Okay, I made up the part about Bat-Hound.
Well, the whole Dick Grayson, Jason Todd,
sure.
Both connected to Bruce Wayne, you know.
Yeah. No, it's... As far as for me with Countdown so far, I mean, as I already mentioned, you know, in great detail, I was, you know, just personally, I was hoping it wasn't going to be so Megaverse kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really early days. Countdown, I mean, we're only two issues in. Sure, it could turn out to be great. I'll agree, it hasn't really grabbed me. I mean, I'll admit that, you know, I've read a lot less from the writers that are writing Countdown, including Paul Dini. I mean, his reputation certainly precedes him, but I've not read much Paul Dini. I'll agree with John that, yeah, the execution hasn't been bad. I mean, the other writers I'm not as familiar with, but, you know, I'm willing to be newly won over by them. I guess my problem so far is I just don't know what it's about. You know, like, I don't really know what to expect. And some things that don't help it, such as the fact that it's counting down. I mean, counting down to an end isn't always... And, I just tend to be sometimes pedantic and rather conventional about story structure. I'm a big kind of classics nerd, and I like well-structured things. I like the well-told play. I kind of like the three-act structure, stuff like that. So the notion that we're kind of counting backwards, and I don't really feel like that much of a plot has begun other than this sort of rogue monitor, it just leaves me not really... I like a good signpost in a first issue of where we're going and a little bit of what theme is and... what to expect. I like the feeling that the story's starting, and I just haven't gotten that so much from this.
I had thought that they had pitched that in issue 51 there was going to be this big major death that would touch everybody in the DCU, and it would be this huge big deal kind of, not necessarily a Death of Captain America level event, but something.
Yeah.
Dula Dent? Who the hell cares?
Yeah, or more so that, you know, somebody said, I thought it was DiDio, or somebody kind of said, and I'm sure they used the asterisk when they put it in print, but they kind of said, oh, Countdown is the shit blows up series. You know, like, it almost seemed like they were trying to spin some people's complaints about 52, that, oh, you know, it's too slow, there's not enough action. Well, Countdown, oh, shit blows up in Countdown. It's like, well, you know, so far, it's like, it kind of feels like a day in the life.
Yeah.
You know, by contrast, I mean, I know it's not fair to compare the end of 52 to the beginning of Countdown, though they kind of invite that comparison by stealing the book design of 52 for Countdown, not a great choice. But even comparing the beginning of 52 to the beginning of Countdown, like 52, you kind of felt like, okay, strap me in, here we go. You know, it's like right down to the last panel with the question, spraying the question mark over the bat signal and asking, are you ready? It felt like, all right, here we go. You know, and I just, in these first two issues, I just don't feel like there should be some sort of splash, some sort of big bang to make me feel like it's on.
It's funny because, I mean, while you were talking about the start of 52 and stuff, to me, I would equate the start of 52 with kind of the beginning of a roller coaster ride when you're getting cranked up that first hill. You're thinking, okay, this part isn't exciting, but I know it's got to get up to where I can hit that crest, and then we're just going to take off.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And I haven't gotten the sense on Countdown of a ticking clock, of setup going somewhere, and kind of that trigger event that gets stuff running.
Well, also when they had the scene in the second issue with Batman and
Karate Kid,
that felt very forced to me. It felt like they were sort of like jury rigging that into there, because apparently, you know, because Countdown's going to be the one that's happening while other events in the DCU are happening.
Yeah. It's funny because we talked about this exact kind of a series in our last discussion.
Yeah.
About how they should have something as a spine that has touch points into other titles, to where you can get a sense for, okay, this was happening here, this was happening there, whatever. And while they got the idea right, I think some of the execution was really weak, because I think the pages we got on the Batman Karate Kid fight in Countdown should have been in Justice League of America number 8 a month ago, or 2 weeks ago, or whenever the hell it was.
Yeah.
You know, I felt they had short-shrifted that other comic there, and here this issue was just out of nowhere and goes nowhere.
Yeah, and to me that's a lose-lose. I don't recall in our other conversation what I might have said about, you know, whether I thought a book that's the spine and everything ties into it is a good idea or not. At this moment, I feel like it isn't, because I feel like, you know, and it gets back to what the problems of the continuity newspaper would be. You know, if you've already read the Justice League issue, You've seen that fight, so you're bored. If you haven't read it, you have no idea what that means. You're like, hey, look, Batman is fighting with a guy from the 70s, and they're kung fu fighting. All right, that happened. You know, like, there's no way of, you know, you either feel like you're left out, or you feel like you've just bought the same four pages twice.
And there was nothing in Countdown pointing you to, if you want to know more about this, go check out.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well,
I mean, there's a tiny bit of trade dress on the front cover of that Justice League issue, like by the barcode that kind of says Countdown 50. So you're meant.
Was there?
Yeah, it was really easy to miss, but I noticed it when I was putting it away the other day. So it's like, okay, so when I read that Justice League issue, I suppose that's meant to make me think, oh, this happens at the same time as Countdown 50. But maybe that's not enough. You know, it's like, because I feel like these things, I should be able to just read Countdown. Like, I should be able to just read Countdown, and by the time I'm done, I should be completely charged to go check out those other tie-ins or read them in trades later or things like that, in the same way that hopefully a relatively new reader who read 52 and enjoyed it might be inspired to go find older adventures of these characters or to jump onto the new adventures of the characters that they met. And I just feel like Countdown is going to either... You know, I got that Justice League scene because I'm reading Justice League, but I'm sure a few weeks from now there's going to be that Catwoman tie-in. I couldn't tell you Catwoman's real name. Is she still Selina Kyle? I don't know. I think she was pregnant. Yeah. Darkseid could be the father for all I know. What do I know from Catwoman?
Well,
so when that Catwoman stuff comes up, I'm going to be that guy that's going to go, oh, she's got a squid face? Like, I'm just going to feel left out is my guess. Well, I mean, I haven't published it yet. Hey, maybe they might prove me wrong, but... If Countdown 50 is an example, I feel like it's going to exclude and it's going to baffle.
It's kind of reminding me a bit about what I did not like about Civil War Frontline. The fact that Civil War Frontline was supposed to be happening at the exact same time as Civil War, and some of the events that were portrayed in it didn't quite match up with Civil War.
Sure.
I'm afraid the same thing is eventually going to start happening in Countdown. Similarly to the way it happened in World War III. You know, that certain stuff didn't match up quite right.
Well, you kind of ask for trouble when you do that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And also by tying some of these things together, you know, like they did with the Karate Kid stuff, since we know he's going to be, based on solicitations and stuff, going to be in future issues of Countdown, that implies he makes it out of the JLA-JSA Legion crossover unharmed. And it's like, well, okay, that, you know, they've already set up in that somebody's going to die. Well, I guess it's not him. You know, so it's like, if you're going to play on that kind of a big canvas, you've got to be organized, and you've got to have your marketing people on board.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's hard to do.
Yeah. Well, and if it turns around, like if, let's say, another month goes by and things synchronize and you start to feel like, okay, Countdown's caught up and these things are coming out and it is working well across and sideways, then great. Then that might be fun. Like, if there is a unifying event and, you know, Darkseid shows up and you're feeling it across all these titles, okay. But, I mean, I'll be honest, already when I read the solicitations for, you know, whatever his book's 2 months, whatever solicitations just came out this week, it's like I'm reading the DC solicit and, like, half of them are Countdown tie-ins and half of them are Amazon Attacks tie-ins.
Yeah, or they're 52 spin-offs, or
spin-offs. And first of all, there's part of me that's feeling like, good Lord, can't somebody just do their own thing for a month? But also, well, is Amazon's attack going to be reflected in Countdown? Am I not meant to feel like the Amazon's attack tie-in book of this and such or that and such, is that not happening at the same week?
We don't know.
Countdown? Like, I try to not worry about stuff like that too much, but they're kind of asking me to.
Normally
I don't care.
They're setting expectations.
If you're going to kind of, you know, and what was brilliant about 52 is that we didn't have to worry about it because they carved out, they dug a big moat around the story and went, it's all in here and nothing else and nobody's getting in and these characters aren't getting out and this is the story. And Countdown is kind of doing the opposite, kind of going, hey, this is the third week of August in the DC universe and it's just asking me for things to not sync up. And it just seems like they're setting me up to be frustrated by making me want to have everything sync up.
You've got a great point, though, that with 52, where it was pretty much insular and self-contained, Countdown is literally the DC saga. Everything is part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can get into so much trouble with that.
Yeah.
Well, the concern I have is we've gotten – I mean, Dan Didio's been with DC, what, 5 years now? And some of the stuff that he set up early on in his tenure were seeds he planted that later came into fruition, that became, you know, the start of the Titans and Outsiders back from the Young Justice Titans graduation day, which I mark as kind of the beginning of this overarching DC story that we've been going through. We went through Infinite Crisis, or Identity Crisis, Infinite Crisis with the lead up to that, 52, all this kind of stuff. We've gotten to the point where it's not planting seeds, letting them grow, and harvesting them. We're literally into crop rotation. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, it's like, okay, you know, this is 52, which is setting us up for Countdown, which is going to set us up to Final Crisis or whatever the hell it is, which will set us up for the next thing. Let's rotate out. Let's go to the next, you know. And it gets to the point where, and I was starting to feel this a little with 52, is it's like, okay, the important continuity stuff's going to happen in 52. The other stuff doesn't matter as much. Now it's what's happening in Countdown, and if it's not tying in, does it really matter? And as a reader, I should be feeling that everything I'm reading is vitally important to the ongoing DC universe, and all of it matters. And I think they're not really setting that up.
And on the flip side of that, there's times where I, as a reader, just want to enjoy a good Teen Titans story. Just want to get a good, you know, adventure, you know, and I don't want it to be so tied into what is capital I important, you know. And getting back to when Didio started, like when I've caught up on some of these titles and trades, like with Teen Titans, there's wonderful little moments that strike you when you reread it where, yeah, just a little touch is seeded in, where like the Titans are in the midst of something completely unrelated, but then, you know, whatever it is, I forget, you know, Raven feels a tremor and the whatever, and you realize that's the whole Superboy punching the floor of my apartment or whatever it was that he did. That's the Superboy punching the walls as a reality thing. They're referencing it here. And mm-hmm. this comic didn't have a thing on the front that said, this ties in with, you know, 18 months till Infinite Crisis. You know, like, there's nothing on it that advertises it. It's just there.
Yeah.
And to me, that shows a kind of maturity in planning and a verisimilitude that I love. But it doesn't kind of make it a constant weekly drumbeat towards it. And I'd like to get back to that. Like, with the Megaverse. So the Megaverse is there. We know it's there. We have that dramatic irony. They don't. Just start to layer it in. Just suddenly there's a little thing that's unexplained. And we kind of go, oh, I wonder if that's a this and that. And 2 years from now, have your final crisis. You know, let's not...
Give it some time.
I don't want the clock to be ticking on it.
We can't have a crisis every 6 months, because then you become
Marvel. You say that now.
Then you become Marvel, honestly. And I'm not saying that because I dislike Marvel. I'm a Marvel fan. I always have been.
Or DC in the 90s. When
exactly.
You had
I'm really not seeing any difference between DC and Marvel right now in terms of how quickly they're doing the events.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the same trend on both sides.
And it's not going to be a positive in the end. It really isn't, because if you keep churning out these events, they become worthless after a while.
I take that back. I see one key difference with how DC's doing it. With Marvel, with Civil War, with World War Hulk, whatever, you get a part of the big overarching thing, but usually a side part every week. With DC, particularly with 52 and with Countdown, we're literally in nonstop event mode.
Yep.
Each and every week we're getting something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aside from doing, you know, 7 issues a week or whatever to make it daily or whatever, I mean, aside from physically changing the shipping schedule, they can't get into a more event mode.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And let's say Countdown is a huge financial success, and we get to Final Crisis. Who's to say the Final Crisis isn't another 52-week book? I mean,
would
possibly get them, even for the best artistic reasons, to turn off that weekly spigot?
I think we're more likely to see is just event burnout.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how good Countdown may be. I think we're going to hit a point where people are just, you know, enough's enough. I've been shelling out $3 a week or whatever, you know, $2.50 now, $3, you know, they gotta phase out. And some of the initial indications on how Countdown is selling isn't selling good, but not great.
Huh.
And, you know, it doesn't have the longevity that some of the early issues of 52 had on the shelf and things like that.
Yeah.
So
I also have to wonder whether, you know, I don't know at what point the Countdown decision got made, but, you know, was there the same amount of lead time? I mean, I'm not saying that the 52 team had years, but you get the feeling that they got a good head start, you know, and that a lot of resources were put towards the initial, and that there was an initial artistic decision. And I worry, I can't know, but I worry that Countdown was not an artistic decision.
Yeah.
It was a marketplace decision.
Mm-hmm. I think Countdown, the decision was made probably within the first quarter of 52.
Mm.
And I think it was a gutsy move if that was the case, mm-hmm. because this was before they really knew where 52 was going to kind of level out to, or if it was going to level out. 52, I think the seeds were planted, certainly with Ralph's storyline and stuff like that, back in Identity Crisis, and certainly by the time they started Infinite Crisis, they had to be working on 52.
Mm.
They were getting the script for issue 23 or something done around the time the first issue shipped.
Yeah.
So that implies...
Sure. From what I've read, I mean, I know the decision, you know, I mean, the decision to what are we going to do with the missing year was made at the same time at whatever the 1 year later decision was made. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, so again, I mean, I also think that there was also something by which 52 was the result of taking advantage of an opportunity. Well, hey, you know, we've already decided on this 1 year later jump to reinvigorate these books. What are we going to do with that year?
Yeah.
Hey, what if we did this with it?
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
is very different than Countdown, which feels like, so 52 is going to end. And we sure do like people coming to the shop every week to buy.
They want to hang on to the
book they weren't going to buy. Yeah. How are we going to get them to keep buying it? Which is a very different thing. I mean, especially when it's not like, hey, what are we going to do with this year we've carved out? It's instead, what can we make? How can we make another year? Well, we'll count down to something. You know, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's you know, there's something already. It's, you know, when a band goes into the studio and goes, hey, that's great. Let's make another album like that one. It just,
yeah.
usually things don't go so well.
While the 1 year later books were working off of 52 and Infinite Crisis, it feels like mm-hmm. Countdown is working off of the books that are happening right now. And
yeah.
that's the complete opposite, and I'm not quite sure if it's going to work.
Yeah. Worse yet, it's the middle. It's working towards something else.
Exactly,
it's
yeah.
It's just there to be a huge opening act of
yeah.
something else, maybe. I mean, that's my worry, is that it's that. And I hope that there's a story that Paul Dini is desperate to tell. That's my hope. I don't know what that story is yet. But
yeah.
to me, Countdown has the potential if it wasn't just, hey, Paul Dini, you're a solid pro. Make us a 52-episode season of a serialized DC book. We know you can do it. I don't want just 52 episodes of, you know, of an animated series kind of thing. I want him to have a 52-part story that he loves.
Yeah.
That
you know,
he can't wait to work with all these people to tell.
If it were Bruce Timm in that role versus Paul Dini, I'd have a very different attitude towards Countdown, a much more positive one.
Really?
Because the interviews and stuff I've read with Bruce Timm when I've heard him talk in San Diego and stuff, it was very clear to me he understands how the DC Universe works, can work, and should work. And I'm not saying that Paul Dini doesn't have that. I don't have that same level of confidence in him. You know, so far, for me, the jury's still out on Countdown. I've been okay with the issues I've read, certainly top of the stack, but that's more because, oh, gee, this is the big, you know, key continuity thing for DC. And, you know, continuity is a big deal to me. It's, you know, I like to think that what I'm reading matters and is going to build and go somewhere. But, you know, so far, you know, in these two issues, it's not having the payoff. It's not... And by payoff, I'm not expecting big story payoff yet, just in terms of it doesn't feel like it's meeting my expectations on that. You know, it's okay comics, but it's average comics.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know a lot about Bruce Timm, but from what I hear in conventions, Paul Dini, a little shifty. This is what I hear. I don't know for sure.
I like it when an episode has a theme. I enjoy that. I enjoy that muchly. But now you know, Paul Dini's never really let me down on any of the things that he's done in the past. His Batman stuff has been great. I'm hoping his Countdown stuff will be as good, but we're just going to have to wait and see as he gets further into it. What I do want to touch on a little bit here is sort of have like a little bit of a lightning round on other things in 52.
Sure,
that
we are approaching our fifth hour and second minute.
Yes, exactly.
Of the podcast.
I want to do a little bit of a lightning round, and then we'll get into the forum comments, and then end it because we're getting close to 3 hours, and we're getting close to the amount of time we spent on the last episode. So I'm definitely going to have to.
But we had more issues to cover this time. We should go for another.
I did my shifty bit 3 times, which means I can't do it anymore.
Meanwhile, as well. Space Heroes.
And I'm out of cookies as well.
Damn it.
I didn't talk about them that much. I think you had too many cookies.
I had my Lobo drink, too. I've already had it, so, you know. Now it's just all that's left is work, so lightning round.
Lightning round. All right, okay. Did you see the Skeets reveal coming? That's an important thing right there because, well, Mr. Mind, while I was thinking it could be it, I was much more on the bandwagon of it possibly being that guy who died in Countdown.
Maxwell Lord.
Maxwell Lord, yes.
I'm going to go and say they did not set it up to be Skeets or Mr. Mind. I'm going to go even further and say that what they did show us implied that it couldn't possibly be Mr. Mind.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I'm still unclear exactly when and how Mr. Mind got into Skeets. Can you answer that for me?
I thought that he was the guy, the kid with the hat and the gloves that John talked about in the last episode. And I was terribly disappointed.
Danny Chase.
When he
good
wasn't.
Callback, but no cigar.
Yeah. No, I'll be honest, After I got Supernova right, and then I kind of didn't press my luck. After that, I kind of knew I wasn't going to get who Skeets was. I was hoping that it would be Max Lord a little bit, although there was no precedent for it. Like, I don't even think his name is spoken in 52, so it's kind of good that it wasn't. I'd have to reread it to know how or if the Mr. Mind thing was set up, because I've only read the 52nd issue once. So I'll take your word for it, John, having just reread it, that was something that... I mean, it is. They've been upfront about the fact that Skeets being a baddie was quite a late decision. You know, I think that was like week 11 or something that Grant Morrison came up with that. And they ran with it. And I'm glad they ran with it because it was fun and it added a lot to the Booster Gold story. And I just love the notion of Skeets as a baddie because he's just this tiny little robot. You know, like I remember I barely ever buy toys, but I could not resist the Booster Gold and the Animal Man figures that came out the other week. So they're two blonde superheroes. And I loved opening up this package and there's a tiny little cheapy hunk of plastic for Skeets, and I'm like, you are a terrifying villain, you know, like it's something, it's a tiny little thing, but and put him down, you know. Probably it's probably not set up very well because it was introduced so late. I did, at the point where we ran out of people to reveal, I kind of figured, oh, okay, the people that have been talking about Mr. Mind must be right, because I knew Mr. Mind had to come back and there was kind of nobody else left.
Well, Daniel Carter was left.
Like, once we knew who Yurd was, once we all the horsemen were revealed, and I was like, okay, well, Mr. Mind's got to be something. So at that point, people who had been talking about, you know, like Peter had and others had been talking about Mr. Mind being in Skeets, I was like, oh, okay, that must be it. But I don't think I could justify whether they had actually laid the groundwork for it.
I had a feeling it could be him because of the early mentions in the series. However, I was much more leaning towards somebody who had some sort of technological background that could have just gotten himself inside of there, because how the hell could Mr. Mind even get inside Skeets in the first place?
Well, he's very small.
Yeah.
Well, there's the how, there's the when, there's also a bit of the why.
Yeah.
Because we see Mr. Mind in the first issue, Savannah gets taken, okay, or that Savannah has him trapped, and again when Savannah gets taken. We see in the second issue, I think, Mr. Mind has got a cocoon now. No, wait. I think second issue is when Skeets is getting looked over by Magnus is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the many places. Apparently, everyone who ever gets near Skeets and Skeets is open up, they copy his memory. It just seems like a good idea.
Sure. Hey.
Well, this is a back to the future sports.
I've lost enough Skeets memories in my time.
Exactly.
Young man, that I've learned my lesson.
Look, how often
having to reprogram Skeets from the beginning is such a pain.
How often have you needed assistance on your video games and thought to yourself, if only I had Skeets?
If I had a flying gold football next to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, this is the lightning round. I'm going to say John is right, and let's move to the next part of the lightning round.
Okay.
All right, cool, that works. Rip Hunter, is he related to the Booster Golds or not?
I think certainly.
I like that he's blonde. I like to use Bond. If there was a Rip Hunter figure, I'd get him too.
He looks too much like them. And everything about his lab, about the supernova suit, et cetera, is keyed to the Carter physiology.
Yeah.
He's got to be in there.
I think in the booster series that'll come about.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and I'm most excited about the booster series of the 52 spinoffs because it's crafted by, it's the only one that's actually written by one of 52 people. So I feel like that'll be the only 52 spinoff where we're actually resolving things that will have been hinted at in 52.
That just seems like a fun series, though.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's just a great premise. But whereas I feel like I worry that some of the other things, even, you know, and it'll break my heart, like the $4 an issue, 48-page thing that Animal Man's in,
uh-huh.
I kind of worry that we're kind of just making stuff up for it. Like, hey, let's go back to space. We yeah. missed the thing out there. Come on, man.
Oh, you saw your wife. Let's go. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm kind of like, I felt that it was done. It took so much to get home from space.
He just got his jacket back, right? He just got his jacket back, and now he's going
to
lose it again. I mean, come on.
Yeah, whereas I feel like the Booster Series, things were purposefully left for them to do. Everything from exploring the Megaverse to, I think you're right, the reveal that Rip's history is actually tied in with the two of them.
And the series upcoming, I mean, the fact that you've got Johns and Juergens, I'm sold.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that one looks really strong.
Yeah.
I hope it does well.
I certainly hope so. Series that will come out of 52 that haven't been announced yet. What will they be, and who would you like to see on them?
I'd, of course, love to see Rucka to do more with Montoya is the question.
Of course.
You know, and it'd be fun to get to put her in, you know, back in her element. I mean, there's such a wonderful lineage connection, you know, sort of DNA connection between, you know, it was Denny O'Neill that got Greg Rucka into DC. So there's such a connection between Greg Rucka as a DC writer and the history of Question as a character that there's just, you know, it just, that would be a thing that I'd love to see. And I would almost rather it be, I'd be up for a book that it's Montoya and Batwoman as a supporting character.
Yeah.
I'd almost rather it be more like the Question series where she's just, you know, she's not really dealing with superheroes.
Uh-huh.
Like she's just the Question and doing her own
thing. I'd kind of like to see those two somehow connected with Birds of Prey, either as a backup feature or something.
That'd be great.
I want to see more of them, but I don't know that I want to see them in their own book.
Well, the fact that Gail Simone is leaving Birds of Prey makes me want it to be in Birds of Prey a little less. However, the person who's taking over Birds of Prey, that's McKeever, correct?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
McKeever is now... They keep kind of reshuffling. They're kind of doing musical chairs. Sean McKeever was just announced to be taking over Teen Titans.
Okay. That's after after Beecham's run, though, right?
In place of, I thought.
Place of Beecham.
Oh, in place of?
Beecham got moved to...
Okay. Well, Beecham's doing...
I think Beecham's doing about 5 issues of Titans before McKeever's on it. I could be wrong, though, but...
Yeah,
I thought they had announced he was going to do that, but then bumped him to some other title.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
okay,
I can't keep track.
Well, no, Beecham is on after the few issues of Teen Titans that he already did, he is on the Space Story. He and Gray are going to be on the Space Story. That I do remember.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be a really good writer on Birds of Prey to actually have Montoya and Batwoman be in it. If not... Just give me a general Gotham story, you know, like Gotham Files or something like that, where you have the you know, the supporting cast of the Batman family in there, and I'll be happy.
Mm. I also would read a monthly or even weekly Oolong Island book.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure they'll never get their own book, but I
love Oolong Island.
I sure do love Oolong Island.
I mean, especially with what they've been doing with Checkmate and Outsiders. That's really good.
I was psyched that they came up in that.
Yeah.
I
would like to see Animal Man just in his own book. You know, even after this whole space thing, I want him back in his own book, and I want Grant Morrison writing it again. But
Like a mini or a graphic novel.
Oh, sure.
I'll be honest. I mean, I love the character to death. I don't know. It's like I do and I don't. It's like I don't know whether there's anything left for to be said.
Uh-huh.
It's also too dangerous. I think he should retire. It's safer.
For some of these characters, I'd rather see them do a miniseries where they've got creators who have a specific good story they want to tell versus, oh, we think he's popular enough to sustain an ongoing and have it fizzle after a year or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's sort of too soon. Like, just like the Megaverse, I wanted it to hang there for a while. I want Black Adam to be missing for 18 months. So that when he comes back, it is a huge deal.
Hey, well, you know,
I don't want it to be solicited already.
Technically, he's already been missing 18 months.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
No.
Like, I want it to be 18 of our months.
Okay.
All right. Because it's like, it's it won't feel like any time has passed.
I guess.
It'll feel like, ooh, Black Adam's missing and he's done terrible things. Black Adam is back in an 8-issue miniseries. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
I just want some of that stuff to get to percolate.
And
I take John's point that I'd love it to be, you know, a year or two from now, somebody, some new hot writer, some new to DC writer, somebody we've never even heard of, looks at some piece of the puzzle left over from 52 and goes, you know what? If we took, like with Animal Man, if it was an Animal Man story, but it was this and that thing, you know,
sure.
They just get to pick something up, one of these newly invigorated properties,
mm-hmm.
and run with it. So it comes, again, from an artistic place, not a marketplace decision.
I got
not
you.
A strike while the iron's hot, it's Animal Man time.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know? Yeah.
And
who's
by the
available?
Way, that would be a wonderful slogan for the Animal Man animated series, but...
Actually, you know... The stuff that Bruce Timm's doing, taking various other properties like New Frontier and some of the Titan stuff and turning them into animated features, I'd love to see them do with 52.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be absolutely
great. Can you imagine this as a series of, you know, 20-minute installment, you know, animated things or however long
perfect.
It'd work out to?
It'd be absolutely perfect. And, I mean, they could do what they're doing with the new Spider-Man animated series even. And just have it go straight to DVD. They don't even have to, you know, put it on TV if they want, so they can get away with more. And
can you imagine though if Cartoon Network had a weekly half hour, you know, all year a new, you know, episode?
Oh, sure.
Sort of thing.
No, that would be totally awesome. But again, I'm not quite sure if it's suited for Cartoon Network because I don't know if Cartoon Network would actually, you know, air it. That's the thing.
There's the minor ripping people limb from limb, but aside from that.
Which is, to do that, there's a technical term for that, you know.
What
to rip one limb from limb is on panel is to shiznit.
Okay.
In respectful honor to Jamie, who speaks against it for a while now.
I would figure it would be
to
shiznit or something, but yeah.
Well, all I have to say is
right
that,
off.
All I have to say is that there's absolutely nothing wrong with 52 in any way whatsoever. It is the most perfect thing ever.
Lightning round, what's next?
All right.
John was right about that too. What's next?
How many ninjas in the middle of the desert does it take to take down Batman?
It takes six, but they have to have really weird tattoos on their hands.
Batman is allowed to defeat Galactus if he's given proper time to plan.
Yes.
Batman geez. Would plan for Mogo. Next. John was right
what
about
was
that
in those
thing.
Cookies?
I'm getting tired. It's been a long day.
It is a very, very good question. I'd have to say Loboboos. All right.
Yes, no, and it's just in the third hour, one begins to lose one's mind.
Yes.
We've now got another minute or two before we hit that third hour.
In Infinity Inc., how many members of the original Infinity Inc. are actually going to be in Infinity Inc.?
Ooh, is there already an Infinity Inc.?
It has been announced, yes. I'm not quite sure.
It has not been solicited, though.
Yeah.
Starlight.
They're making books
beyond
all
that.
These things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Starlight would just be probably Steel's. I mean, she'd just be like female
Steel.
Well,
no, she's back to Iron Maiden or whatever, so not even that. Yeah. I don't know.
I'd say only Natasha. I feel like if an Infinity Inc. book launches,
Gabe
Fury out of this whole Steelworks thingy. And I don't know that any of the. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Gabe Ferry's got to be in it.
Gabe
you
Ferry.
Have no clue who that is, do you?
I sure don't.
He's the guy that Iron...
I bet Jimmy Olsen knows his identity.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Sorry, this is
the guy who that was yelling at Luthor during the whole business school opening or whatever.
Oh, okay. Is he like a... He's got
to,
history to him.
He talks to Steel or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Lines up at Steelworks.
Man.
Starts out as a black man, becomes a Caucasian man later. I mean, nobody knows.
That's a pretty good power. I could fight crime with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is multi-ethnic man.
Diversity, lad.
What do we need today?
What do we not have enough of?
That
is a Legion of Superheroes character waiting to happen. I'd actually like to see Jade, actually, go in there, because I sort of like her character to the point where, you know, she is not even certain if she even wants to fill the role of, you know, Jade, because obviously there is no original Jade anymore. So I'd like to give her
the same powers. I mean, come on.
I know. But
I'll be honest. I'm at the point. I kind of barely remember most of the Infinity Inc. members. Like, I remember Natasha. I remember Everyman, although he's not going to be on the team. The rest of them just felt so kind of flash in the pan with borrowed names that I just feel like there's kind of no there. Like, I feel like if they're going to launch an Infinity Inc. book, it should be Steel. You know, like Steel's kind of the mentor. Professor X-y kind of character. You have Natasha leading it, and then they kind of bring in some other, young, either new people or young people in and around the DC universe that aren't already Titans or Outsiders. Or
the one character I think they need to pull in as an advisor or peripherally involved but not part of the team, Gimmix. That was the sister of Skyman, Sylvester Pemberton, the one who would actually own the rights to the name if she surfaced.
That's right.
I see. Okay.
That would be a good explanation for how they get it back out of Luthor, kind of stick it to him in the process.
And also bring in Obsidian, okay? Because he's doing absolutely nothing in the JSA book right now.
He's like the butler.
Exactly. And he's just sort of being wasted over there. And he's an original Infinity Inc. member.
Yeah.
So what better place to put him than Infinity Inc. to, you know, sort of train new people in the tradition of Infinity Inc. So you could put him in there, definitely.
Adam Smasher would be an interesting one, too, maybe.
Certainly.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course. Yeah, he's still at large. So get some of the old members back and have that be perhaps another place where, like the JSA, you've kind of got the young guard and the old guard, you know, and the people that used to be the sidekicks are now, you know, it's like what Cyborg is now like in the Teen Titans. It's like he's not a teenager anymore. He's a grown-up and can provide
It'd be fun to do that, but then what makes that title different than either JSA and or Titans?
I don't know. I don't know why we need it. It's like I kind of forgot that they were even going to do one, so...
I mean, it'll be fun. You know. It'll be fun. I'll probably pick it up, but, like you said, why...
I would like to see them bring in some characters, and I don't know who the right ones would be, but what I would like to see for the Steelworks Infinity Inc. kind of a thing that would make it unique is this would be kind of sort of DC's equivalent almost to the Fantastic Four, if you will.
Sure.
These are scientific adventurers.
Oh, yeah.
I see. Okay. So
these are the troubleshooters. These are the people who, JLA satellite gets taken over. Here's who you call in.
So they would take the place of what Challengers of the Unknown used to be, basically.
Kind of, sort of, but they would have, one, they would have powers, two, they would be uber high-tech.
Uh-huh.
They would be Challenges of the Unknown meets Star Labs meets, I don't know what else.
Cadmus.
Star Labs really picks up the tech side of it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I gotcha. How many times is Terra going to die before she dies?
This is, I think, 3.
Is it all the same Terra? I've been... That Terror of Trigon thingy's been on back order for me for ever and a day. So I'm going to read New Titans, but, like, I'm waiting for the... So I don't
there
know,
was...
Has it been the same Terror this whole time? Or are there multiple?
Well, we don't know.
Crisis on Infinite Terrors?
There was the original one. There was another one that may or may not have been the original one. And then there was this one.
And this one really might have been the original.
About.
Yeah, might have been the original one, because...
It could be the original one kept dying.
Yeah. I think that's actually the case, because Geo-Force now has this one's powers, and that would only make sense if she was his sister. So
yeah, okay.
So
I will say
sure
that
makes sense then, but okay.
As much as those World War III tie-in deaths were kind of lame, I have to admit that the gallows humor of the fact that to be a Teen Titan is to get ripped limb from limb and killed, and that they have, like, I can only imagine what it's like for the Teen Titans to get, like, insurance. Like,
I'm just thinking Frankenstein Jr., that shouldn't have bothered him as much. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but...
but, you know, I mean, I do kind of... It's terrible, but I kind of like that that's become sort of a dark theme, is that the Teen Titans in the last three or four years are like the worst team in the world to be a member of. Well, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy.
Whatever you do, never join the Titans when Beast Boy is leading. Because I think we've sort of proven that point by this time around. But
yeah.
In your honest opinion, how did Cyborg and Firestorm actually get separated?
John.
Plot deviceium.
Okay.
They had nothing. I mean, the whole thing of, oh, we've used some kind of magic, you know, serum to put them in time suspension made no sense.
Yeah.
I file that question under how do the smartest people in the DC universe not get that Clark Kent is Superman with glasses on?
I can buy that because that's premise. Secret identity is part of the premise. This is something they set up, and, I mean, we're never going to find out. It's the problem.
Exactly.
This was a line of dialogue in Titans. Huh?
Okay. I thought Titans had something about it, but maybe not.
They had one line of dialogue at the first panel of 1 year later, basically kind of recapping. Here's a quick series of snapshots of what little he remembers from that year.
Yeah.
This is when they introduced Wendy and Marvin, who I don't think have ever been seen since.
No. They've been in a couple of issues. They're still at the tower. They're still at the tower. They were in at least three or four of the issues that actually took place at the tower, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wendy dressed up as Tara for Halloween and was ripped limb from limb.
Yeah.
We haven't seen her since.
It did not end well.
The Firestorm thing, it's like, I mean, they could bother to explain it, but to me it would be, I guess I don't care.
They
because
did.
Like, I get bored when I'm going to hear about how we fixed the engine of the ship. Like,
I don't want to hear about it.
Is it tachyons this time, or is it anti-tachyons? Like, I don't care.
Okay.
The problem I had is in World War III, they explained that basically Professor Stein had the brilliant idea of using the JLA transporter to transport them apart. It comes down to a transporter accident. The problem I have with that is at that point, Firestorm and Cyborg were disabled because they were merged together in extreme pain.
Yeah.
And Stein, Martin Stein, who magically saved them, was part of Firestorm at the time.
Yeah.
This comes down to, did they read the issues they were referring to or not?
No.
I will.
Editorial oversight. I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's disappointing.
Yeah. All right. Is Sean Whalen correct in the statement that whenever Hawkman is not around, the world goes to shit?
John.
Well, you know, far be it from me to disagree with Sean, but I'm going to say sometimes even when Hawkman is around, it kind of happens.
Well, Hawkman wasn't around for much of 52, and I didn't mind, you know.
He was off planet the whole time, But, I mean, it wasn't that bad of a year overall.
That's true.
Crime was down overall. You know, there was only one major World War event.
It was a bad year to be a Baalian. The Baalian might disagree.
Yeah, but who the hell cares? We're talking about Americans here.
They created the Baali, all right?
The world which will be cleverly portrayed by the United States.
Yes.
It was also there was a bad month or two to be an Oolong Island.
Sure.
Long Island?
Oolong Island.
Okay, because I was about to say, like I live on Long Island. I'm fine.
Oolong.
So.
There was a week or two there, very bad place to be.
True.
I agree with that statement. All right, let's go to the forum comments here. As considering that there's one, and let's go with Unknown Fanboy here. Overall thoughts of 52 are that I really enjoyed it. Going into the series, I figured there would be weeks where it was purely set up and not action oriented, or have some major event moving the story forward. However, listening to some complaint that a week or weeks were slow and nothing really happened kind of pissed me off, since it seems they could not see the forest from the trees. He's kind of right there. Glad to see that this project was a huge success. It met my expectations, as I made it a point not to read or search out spoilers on the internet or on the boards. Good idea there. I liked the way DC solicited the issues with descriptions that were vague enough to foreshadow what might happen without giving the story away. And that's something that DC should learn, period, in my opinion. Okay, because when they give way too much away, it really, really annoys me.
The goal should be to entice people to read the story, not to tell them why they should have or what they would have gotten if they did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example here in Marvel Comics. I'm not going to say what they did, but in a recent solicitation for Mighty Avengers, they gave away a major plot point for an upcoming issue.
And, my dad.
Yeah, I'm not going to give away what it is.
Yeah.
Wait, say it again.
No, my dad in Mighty Avengers. That was what. I'm sorry, I gave it away. Sorry, go on.
Wait. Your dad, I forget. Did we establish who your dad is on this episode?
No.
Okay. All right. I could have sworn you mentioned earlier that your dad was somebody, but okay.
Oh, that was before we started. I'm sorry.
Exactly. Okay, fine. Right. But yeah, no. They gave away a major spoiler about somebody dying, and yeah, it kind of ruined it for me because I didn't want to find it out. But then I listened to the Pulp Secret podcast, the vidcast, and they mention it in the first two lines of the podcast, and that was not good for me. So. Without spoilers.
Yeah.
That was sad.
That's
good. Yeah. My oh crap moments were when Animal Man supposedly was killed, only to come back in the next issue and in issue 51, where he is home and the two bounty hunters attempt to kill him. However, he did survive because he is Animal Man.
Well, I wasn't worried about him surviving. I was worried about his wife surviving.
Yeah, I know. I thought that
I would have been really miffed if she'd opened the door, they'd said basically trick or treat, Zot, and then Firestorm came.
Oh.
Now, if they'd killed off his wife, that would have,
Yeah, that.
Yeah, I did feel
then
like
he would have been the next Dr. Fate.
I did feel like something ironic and terrible was going to happen. Like it took so long for him to get home, and those bounty hunters come up. Like, no, they couldn't possibly be this mean. Which
yeah, they could not
a very
do another
fun surprise. That. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. There would have been way too many unhappy people.
Yeah.
You know, if we hadn't had that payoff scene with him making it home. The wife and kids there, everything ending up good for him. If that payoff hadn't have been there, I think the entire storyline with him, Adam Strange, and Starfire would have been a complete waste.
Sure. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree entirely.
And I also, the Animal Man fan of me, really enjoyed those little moments where they were able to sneak in the notion that he knows that we're watching him. The Animal Man fan in me enjoyed that too, but
yeah.
That wouldn't have been enough to justify that entire story.
I got one question on the aliens with Animal Man.
Yeah.
Okay, the ones who give him his powers and stuff. To me, they look like really nice, kind of benign versions of the controllers. There's the controllers, the Dominators. The ones that we saw in Legion and stuff with like the piranha teeth and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, are these like some kind of offshoot, the Experimenters or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, it's certainly possible that they might be perhaps a warring faction with them or something.
I mean, they're a holdover from decades ago, so I feel like they're just meant to look like sort of very, is it the Ditko? Just like Ditko-esque sort of spacemen. So, yeah, I mean, I don't,
it was just
I don't know that that's purposeful. I mean, they look like they looked like back in
agreed.
You know.
There just seems to be a coincidental look between how they look and how the other alien, the Dominators, whatever look. It would just be nice at some point to get some kind of why the hell are they doing this? What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Maybe they touched on that. I mean, I know it was part of the whole Animal Man series way back when, but that was ages ago when I read that.
And the Dominators actually have been around in, I believe, Green Lantern Corps very, very recently. So they're all
Atlantic
over the place.
And Legion and stuff. And, of course, Legion, we saw a booster again.
Yeah. And remember the 52.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that they didn't even know what the 52 was. It was just the fact that Booster said it, and he stole something from them. So remember the 52, because Booster said 52. What a great reveal right there.
Did he ever use those weapons he stole?
I don't know if he did.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I thought that maybe that was actually collecting things for the supernova suit.
Or was that the weapon he pulled off the wall back in issue 37 or whatever when
it
did the
reveal?
It could be.
Yeah.
It could certainly be. I'm not gonna I'm not gonna speculate here, but it could.
He just seemed to pick up the thunder missile or whatever from Steel in issue 50. The whatever the hell it was in Supergirl. Had the one thing he used in 37, and it's like, I don't know, it didn't tie together as well as it could have, but whatever. Yeah. It was fun.
And by the way, yes, I must say this at least one more time. She's like E.T. with double Ds. Can we keep her?
My favorite, of course, was that line, like, did Roger hire a stripper? Like, I just thought it was hilarious. You know?
I like the whole bit with the question trying the various words.
Yeah.
Shazam, yeah. Captain Marvel.
And the other standout line was the, I have a disintegrator rifle and bipolar disorder or whatever.
Yes.
There were definitely some lines where you could tell they were very proud that they come up with a very good line.
Yes.
Yeah, they had a couple that were really good.
And what was that line Animal Man said about his friend having a toupee?
Oh, yeah, he's got a toupee and I just saved the universe.
There you go. Yeah,
there's no contest or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, God.
And what's fun is that character is actually a callback to, you know, an Animal Man character from all those years ago.
Yeah, he was like
his
agent,
Grant Morrison,
right?
Wrote, so.
Yeah.
He was.
His best friend or something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unknown Fanboy also says something that we would not agree with, but I wish Booster would have died, but that is okay. That is the only disappointing thing, really, for me.
Well, I mean, he did. That dead body came from somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'm okay with that being an unresolved aspect, because I'd much rather have this all-new Blue Beetle, Booster Gold series, although I'd like Blue Beetle too. I'd rather have a new Booster Gold series than have them resolve and have killed him off at the end of 52.
Agreed.
Yeah, no, me too. I mean, and you know, it stands to reason that, I mean, every character has a body eventually. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but is he going to die in a way that facilitates
that? As do we all.
Mm-hmm.
But it also goes back to Rip Hunter showed up in issue 37, 51 and 52. I'm not sure he showed up anywhere else. And yet he was such a main character in terms of motivating and facilitating storylines. Most of what he did happened off-panel. And a lot of it was the, oh yeah, I saw all this, therefore I know what's going on.
Mm. Yeah.
There were a few things that just seemed, I don't want to say contrived, because that's not fair. But we were told more than we were shown about Rip's storyline.
I could see that. Mm. Yeah.
Do we have anything left on the lightning round list?
Well, once we finish up with this, I want to ask one more thing with the lightning round.
Okay.
So, the multiverse returning. Well, I am not a big fan of it, but I will give it a chance. While I understand the storytelling possibilities, my fear is that they are going to start crossing characters and worlds over and make it confusing and ruin what seems to be the intentions of bringing it back. And we certainly touched on that and agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
Countdown 51 left me interested in the direction of the series, especially with the monitors policing the multiverse instead of just watching. Ah, well, maybe Booster will die in Countdown. Can't wait to hear the episode, Unknown Fanboy. So, I do like that about the monitors. The fact that...
I just wonder what Booster ever did to him.
I think he...
Yeah.
It seems to be very personal.
He called him a weenie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think we know who Supernova really was.
I
forgive him, though, because I believe, if I remember correctly, Unknown Fanboy from the forums is from Albany, which is also where the delicious cookies come from.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
So, he's, you know, it's all good.
It's A-okay. We forgive you entirely, Unknown Fanboy. It's all well with us. But
Booster forgives you.
Yes, exactly. What will be the first world that we get a story out of? Not a crossover story, just a story out of the worlds that have already been introduced.
Mm. I mean, I'm sure within the first year of the Booster title, he'll go to some Earth where Ted is still alive. That's just bound to happen.
Sure.
Like, you know, we all want it, and you know, we'll all be happy to see it. So I'm sure, but I don't think that'll be first. I don't think that'll be the first world that we sort of interact with.
I hope the first world is not Kingdom Come, since we're already going to be getting Kingdom Come aspects in JLA, JSA. I want a book, a standalone book, on the Freedom Fighters Earth.
You know, it's funny, because I'm fine with the idea of Booster Gold being a world-hopping, exploring kind of a title or whatever, kind of like Exiles is over at Marvel. But, you know, I don't really want them to start doing, okay, this title's over on Earth 10, this one's over on Earth 5, this one's on 32, or whatever.
Yeah, no,
because
it
fragments the DC brand.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, and they'll run out. Like, if they do too much of it, it's funny. I mean, 52 Earths will actually go pretty quick if you burn through them. You know,
oh, sure.
It's like, it'll suddenly go from feeling like, look at all the possibilities, to a very particular list.
I hope we get one that is essentially the Hypertime Earth, where as they are on it, they watch it change.
Ooh.
In other words, one of them's just unstable.
That would be
very
interesting.
And that's kind of your catch-all for everything else if you need it.
That would be really cool. I'd really like to see that.
I've got another idea, one that I'd actually kicked around with Sean at one point on what would make for a cool Earth.
Uh-huh.
But I want to develop that a little more before I send
it.
I just, as much as I was a fan of the Earth 2 stuff with All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc. and stuff, I kind of like how most of the, or right now all the DC titles are on one Earth. They don't need to cross over, whatever, but, I mean, over at Marvel it gets a little confusing. I've had to explain to coworkers that, okay, the Spider-Man in Ultimate Spider-Man is a different one than in Amazing Spider-Man, than in, you know, Marvel Adventures Spider-Man, than Amazing Spider-Girl. Then, you know, it's like, in some weeks at Marvel, if I stack my comics correctly, I can read all my Marvel comics with no two issues in a row being set in the same universe. That's just wrong.
No, I agree with that. But hey, how about this, all right? I really want a story set on that Earth where Kyle was supposed to be Green Lantern, the first Green Lantern.
Earth 8 or whatever
exactly,
they mentioned.
Earth 8.
Crisis.
I really want an Earth 8 story.
Actually, the one I want to see them bring back is essentially Earth D or whatever from Crisis on Infinite Earths 4.5 that was in Legends of the DC Universe.
Uh-huh.
And it was essentially the ethnically diverse Earth.
Ah.
And it was a fun different take on it. You get the same basic stuff, but a little different.
Which is actually what our Earth is. It's just that, you know, the comics don't usually show that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the fact that we have an Asian Atom is certainly a good thing.
Sure. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, they're doing better.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's so much better now than it was a couple of years ago. I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
Back when every single character, other than Cyborg and Black Lightning, was white. Mm. This is certainly.
It just seems like nowadays, if they're gonna give somebody else the mantle, you know, take all the Caucasian guys out of the room. They're not in the lineup, you know, as options. You know, we get a new Adam, he's got to be ethnic. We get a new Question, she's got to be ethnic. We get a new Spectre, he's got to be ethnic.
Yeah.
And it's good to have diversity. I have no problem with that. But I'd like to start seeing characters that think and act differently than just look different.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that might, and perhaps that'll help if the creators behind those characters start to become more diverse as well.
Yes.
No question. Yeah. One last question I'll ask everybody before we wrap this up with some final thoughts. If there's one thing that you could have changed in 52, what would it have been and why? It's a tough question. So
I'll go with that. I'll go back to my earlier comment of kind of a deeper canvas. I would have liked to have seen the space getting used better. I would have liked to have seen it getting layered with more things happening in the background that had more, not necessarily relevance, but more meaning. There were enough places where it was confusing as to if something we saw was an Easter egg or a clue or just there for the hell of it or whatever. And something to where, 1,080 pages later, we got a sense that that the DC universe was this big, wide, expansive thing where all things are possible. As it was, we hit Metropolis, we hit Gotham, we hit Kandak, we hit Nanda Parbat, and on Earth, I would be Australia. Beyond that, I mean, we didn't hit all that many places. Did we ever see Gorilla City? Did we see? Not to say we had to, but there are tons of places we could have explored and seen, or at least had mentioned, to get the feeling that at the end of 52, that set the foundation for this new Earth, this new Megaverse, whatever. That the possibilities are wide open. There's this huge thing to go explore. I would have liked to have gotten more hints, seeds, and teasers about that.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's good. I guess if there was one, and it's not a small thing, but if it's one thing that could have been changed if they had set out with, from the beginning with the goal of it being a story and not a guide, if it was more one story. If more of the plot lines combined, I really enjoyed what they shared thematically, but I take the point that was made that it's a good one, that it's not that I wanted them all to be on the front line of World War III together, united as a team or something, you know, Montoya saying, "Booster, throw me the ray gun." You know, we wouldn't want that. But some way in which, in some unlikely way, what Lex Luthor was doing actually has some connection to Lady Styx, which actually has a connection to this.
Well,
so that'd be my one thing.
It's like how the Black Adam and Oolong Island were kind of flip sides of almost, I don't want to say the same plot, very tightly connected, certainly at the end.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How intergang stuff with the Question really revolved between some of those things. And
sure,
almost
the intergang and Oolong Island connection and what that did with Black Adam. Yeah, those were great. So a little more of that. A little more ways in which suddenly you kind of go, wait a minute, you know, where it just becomes one big story.
Yeah.
Or at least enough interweaving that even if they don't all come to the same climax, they at least clearly take place in the same world and influence each other in some way.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I were to change one thing, I'm gonna cheat a little bit and mention three things here. More ambush bug. Okay, that's just me.
Okay.
All right.
I'll go with that.
Let's actually get a story. Super Chief was the one that died like out of nowhere, right? On that Justice League? I mean, why even bother introducing a character if you're just going to kill him off 3 issues later?
Yeah,
That was the whole point of his story. No free lunch.
Well, I mean, it's...
He set up some of the key rules of magic. Or at least illustrated.
I guess.
I mean, he fit the theme, but I feel like... I don't know. I'll be interested when the commentary with the trade gets published to find out whether there was some final bit of him that was planned that they didn't get to.
Well, I remember actually in one of the interviews recently that they said that they had things planned for him, however they had no room for it.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is that, speaking of no room for it, I would have rather there have been 2 extra pages of 52 every month than the backups. I liked the backups to a point, however, I felt that could have so easily have been done in a DC encyclopedia outside of 52, and just given us those 2 extra pages, and life would have been so much easier.
I think aspects of the Secret Origins were completely misunderstood by some people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people saw the Green Lantern one and said, oh, there's no mention of Parallax, therefore it must not exist anymore.
Uh-huh.
It's like, no, this is the secret origin of the character, not the full history.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and
I
agree, a couple more pages would have been good.
Yeah, because I mean, I know what they were trying to do with the backups, but even one of the backups they had planned didn't even end up in 52. It's going to be in Countdown. So, I mean,
well, and the thing is, they probably could have told the same text for the origin in a who's who style. You know, here's a shot of the thing, here's a couple of paragraphs. And we talked about this last time. Maybe they wouldn't have read it. Maybe they would have. Who knows? But that could have cut it down to a page and gotten us another 52 pages for the story.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's at least what I'm saying there. So, final thoughts on 52, quick summary of what we said in the last 3 hours and 15 minutes or so.
Oh, my.
For me, there were a few things that if you start to pick at it and start to really dissect it, some things hold together, some things don't. But what I love about the series is it's 1,080 pages long. It's got enough depth and enough solidity and style to the storytelling that you can pick at it. There's some depth there. And so many stories don't have that.
Sure.
You know, so it wasn't perfect, but by God, it came out each and every week like clockwork.
Yeah.
It was well done. It sold well. It was well received. And, you know, I think, again, the creative team did an amazing job on this. I was overall very pleased.
I agree 100% with that. I feel that with a podcast like this where we're going in and, you know, reviewing an entire half, pretty much, of 52, it's easier to put in, you know, the nitpicks and the, you know, what I would have done differently or that sort of thing. But while I was reading 52, I was enjoying every single minute of it, and I wouldn't really change that much if given the opportunity. It was still the top of the list for me, and it will still be the top of the list for me for a long time to come. It was a success, and that's certainly a plus there. David, summary for you?
Yeah, here. I mean, I'll say that, you know, I just feel very well taken care of as a reader, you know, for this. You know, I mean, it was something that oftentimes expectations are built up and things don't meet those expectations, and I would say when it comes to this series, everything from the price point to the timeliness to the quality to, you know, the big payoffs to even the way that they're going about trading it at a good price point, I just feel like DC's earned a lot of goodwill with this from me, you know, and a good amount of trust. And that, you know, it was something that the interactive, you know, there'd never been something that I'd enjoyed, the sort of interactive element so much. I mean, being able to have things to discuss on the boards with guys like you, you know, about and the podcast and things like that, that it just was, it really felt like it was an experience. And unlike a lot of comics that I've read. So I enjoyed it. I mean, I just, you know, it was that thing that I always looked forward to. And I think that they set out to do a really ambitious thing and a somewhat experimental thing from a lot of standpoints, be it with format or with continuity or with the creative process of multiple writers and a kind of writer's room. And I just hope that beyond just the commercial success and the critical success of it, that there were some things that were found out that will influence the way that other books get planned and written and executed by DC and by Marvel.
Yeah, I certainly hope DC did a serious postmortem on what worked, what didn't work, what they could do differently, what they could do the same, because this was, I think, one of the biggest experiments they've done in a long time. And, you know, I think from a reader perspective, it paid off. I hope it had the same payoff for DC, the company, and all the creators involved.
I hope so, too, because, I mean, again, this is not something that happens very often. You know, something like this being so successful, and hopefully it's proven to them that it can be done, but not that often, please. We have money, but not that much. So I think, yeah, we've said it all at this point. And
indeed.
In 3 hours and just about 30 minutes, to say the least, this will be a two-parter. And, yeah, I mean, I want to thank you guys for joining me again for the second half here. And perhaps we'll have some countdown things down the line, but for now, 52 is wrapped up, so I want to thank both of you guys for joining me this time around. It's been a hell of a lot of a good time and wonderful conversation, so thanks.
Thank you guys. Always a pleasure, and thank you to anyone that has kept up with us this long.
Yeah. No, thanks for inviting us back, Ian. This is always fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, maybe this time will be less than 6 months until the next time we talk. So, David, you got anything you need to plug or anything before we wrap it up? Or
I don't.
Other than cookies from Albany?
They're delicious. I will have to get more of them. And you know, Unknown Fanboy, if you have them, you will forgive Booster. I promise. For whatever it was to you and your family.
So remember that, kids. Cookies. They make you like Booster Gold.
Yeah, even though, you know, Booster Gold, little shifty. Little shifty. I'll grant you.
But aren't they all?
John, you got anything new to plug since last week, or...?
Let's see. I did the March 2007 trade discussion with Chris Marshall. Had all sorts of technical problems recording it the first time, which didn't work at all. Got it recorded the second time, or at least most of it. And I lost about the last 20 minutes or whatever. But all in all, good conversation with Chris, as always. We did that on my Comic Book Page podcast. Beyond that, I don't have any firm plans for any future episodes other than, you know, whatever comes next, because, you know, I'm lazy, I'm busy, whatever.
Well, also, if you want to listen to any of the episodes that John has been on, eventually I'm sure they'll probably all be on his feed, but for now he's got a couple of the Comic Timing episodes. If you don't want to go through my feed, you can go through his on comicbookpage.com. He has...
I've syndicated most of all the episodes I've done, except maybe what I did over on the Amazing Spider Cast.
Okay. I think you might still have a couple more from here that aren't on the feed.
Really?
Yeah. Last I checked, but I'll let you know what's up. I'll do a search for your name on my website and see what comes up. So, yeah.
Ian is a John Mayo podcast completist. He even collects those letters that you wrote to Dave Sim in the pages of Cerebus. He's got those.
There's
got
to be a cure for that disease, I'm sure.
I have to say that John Mayo is my hero. That's all.
Oh.
All right, folks. We're done with episode 39 here. It's
indeed.
Just about 5 hours and 20 minutes at this point, so let's wrap this baby up.
It is enough.
The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. There's a giant listing of Podcast Alley sites on the Comic Tomic forums, as well as digging us on dig.com, a listing of dig.com stuff there as well. Next episode, we're going to be doing a 52 on the brain here. Next episode, we're going to be doing 22 pages number 3 on Nova number 1 and possibly number 2, and we're going to be joined by Equinox Chris Chavez, so should be plenty of fun there, and that will be released once the end of part 2 here is released, and about a week later or so after that, that'll be when that's out. So yeah, that's all here before I die from talking too much. So for John and for David, I'm Ian Levinstein, reminding everybody this shirt is a clue, and there's always time for comics.
Remember the 52!
Woo! Bye. We are out, gentlemen.
Oh. All right, thank you, guys.
My God. That wow. See, aren't you glad we started at 8?
Yes.
I know, huh?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wow. It's 11:47, and I'm done with the 3.5-hour podcast. This feels odd and confusing to me.
Hey, whatever works for you. I got no problem with that.
All right, cool.
You know, all this man behind the curtain talk is taking all the magic away. I just want you guys to know.
Look, I'm sorry. We had to have at least 52 seconds of bullshit before we get into the episode.
Well, there's a lot more magic I could take away, but I won't go there.
Whoa now. Hey. Magic is all fucked up in the DC universe anyway, so let's not even get into that. That's a completely different topic for a completely different day. All
right. That's right.
A little shifty. I'll grant you.
But aren't they all?
Blah.